This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox, sitting in for Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, many House incumbents may be at risk of losing their seats. An anti-affirmative action crusader may have the IRS on his tail, and L.A.'s mayor apologizes to the Muslim community over a snub. Joining us to talk about these stories from our New York Bureau, Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. Mike, nice to have you.
Thank you.
And Laura Washington in our Chicago Bureau. She's a columnist with the Chicago Sun-Times. Hey, Laura.
Hey, Tony. How you doing?
Last but certainly not least, at NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., economist and author Julianne Malveaux, who is president and CEO of Last Word Productions, Incorporated. Julianne, nice to have you back.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, it is the day after some important primaries, folks, and the I word, incumbent, is kind of ugly. That's what the voters seem to be saying, especially in Connecticut, in Georgia, and Michigan, and elsewhere. Laura, let me come to you first. What do you make of this?
Well, you mentioned the I word, Tony. The other I word is Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this Washington Post poll has shown that there is danger for incumbents, especially on that particular issue. I believe two-thirds of Democrats' polls said that it's time for us, if not to get out, certainly to reduce the troops. The issue of what the Democratic Party stands for, which has been an ongoing issue, I think, since the last presidential election, has reared its ugly head, and 47% of Democratic voters said they weren't sure what their party stood for. And I think that does come back, as we have come back again and again, to this issue of what is their message on Iraq. Democrats are in a really bad place because so many of them did support the war. Now they're in a position of trying to parse their positions out and say, well, yeah, maybe I supported the war, but it's time for us to go. And that's a very complicated position to take. And that's obviously what we saw in Connecticut yesterday with the Lieberman contest.
Right. We certainly know what Lieberman's position was. And before I come to you, Mike, I've got a cut from Lieberman, who appeared today talking about his defeat and about his plans for the fall. Let's listen.
The battle goes on, and now it's among Democrats, Republicans, and independents. And I'm carrying it on because Lamont really represents polarization and partisanship, which is the last thing we need more of in Washington.
So, Michael, did he not get the message, or what's going on here?
My I word is not Iraq and not incumbent, but interesting. you know, Cynthia, I see white people McKinney, interesting, because she specialized in being outrageous, but being outrageous is not enough.
Oh, Michael,
point. Her not wearing her congressional pin that fateful day seems to me to have been an omen on the Hill. Lieberman, interesting. Like Cynthia McKinney, these people really believe, these incumbents, these congresspeople, really believe their own press clips. This is a decision on Lieberman's part, after the people decided, the Democrats decided, that is arrogant and egotistical and selfish and shameless. They think they're indispensable, and they're not. voters gave him a message. He's now ignoring the voters. He's going to his traditional base, which is to be to hope that people are still suffering from middle-of-the-road-itis. He wants to be the moderate candidate, the moderate Democrat. He's going to continue to use the word Democrat, even when he's running against the Democrat who won the primary. My question is, where are the real Democrats? Why don't they say, Lieberman, you got to get out. You lost. You got to play by the rules.
Well, Julianne, I heard you step in there for a second. Do you see any similarities, commonalities between the losses of Lieberman and McKinney?
I do. I don't have an I word except for the fact that I am the iconoclast here. But I think that. But I think the issue, the commonality, Tony, is that neither of them managed to maintain engagement with their base. I think that Lieberman, as Michael says, did believe his own press clips. He was missed being vice president, or maybe was vice president, by a few thousand votes. But by and large, he had not engaged his base. Moderate Connecticut Democrats were angry about Iraq. We are spending so much money and people are upset. Cynthia McKinney, I disagree with everything that Michael has said about her and quite frankly consider her a shero. But the fact is that she had not engaged in conversations with her base. Also in the primary stage before this runoff, she missed several debates. And so she basically exhibited an arrogant attitude that basically spilled over. Now, let's not play off the fact that the Republicans were all up in her Kool-Aid, including encouraging people to cross over, that there is probably some chicanery with voting machines. Yesterday morning, her name did not appear Her name didn't appear on the ballots, yeah, Michael, yeah. In at least three precincts. In at least
she's
three.
She's an incumbent.
You can laugh
people know
about
who she
it
is.
If you want to.
Come on, Julie.
But her name is supposed to appear on the ballot. You laugh if you want to, but that is what you call chicanery. I mean, she lost the margin.
But that's
so
not
overwhelming.
Why she, you're not
no,
saying that's why she lost.
No, the margin is so overwhelming that you cannot parse that, but you do have to look at some of that. But I think both of them, what they had in common is that they failed to maintain a connection with their constituency, so that, you know, Democrats tend to be very forgiving, especially in this potential, in this current environment. The Democrats are flailing around trying to find articulation for our dissatisfaction. I mean, Nancy Pelosi has come up with a 6-point plan that no one is excited about, but there's a lot of wiggle room if you engage your base. Neither Lieberman nor McKinney did that.
Now, the question is whether or not, I'm going to put this to you, Laura, whether or not we are, in fact, looking at another 1994, the last time that the Congress switched parties. Is that going to happen this time?
Well, there seems to be indications, as that poll I mentioned earlier, just seems to indicate that there's a similar mood in terms of dissatisfaction on both sides of the fence, Democrats and Republicans, to what you saw in 1994. But I happen to think that these two examples, Lieberman and McKinney, I don't see a lot of commonalities, and I don't think they're necessarily bellwethers for what's going to happen in November. I think in the case of Lieberman, he's what used to be an advantage for him being seen as a moderate, being seen as a bipartisan type legislator, is working against him now. You know, he was seen on camera kissing George Bush last year. Now, he says it was an embrace. Whatever you want to call it, he and George Bush were kissing each other, okay? This is not a great image to have for someone who wants to be perceived as a loyal Democrat. And then when he gets into trouble, and he didn't see the trouble coming, as Michael points out, these incumbents are way too complacent. They're the last to know when they're in trouble. Mm-hmm. When the trouble did come, then he said, well, look, I'm going to run as an independent. What a stupid, terrible mistake. I think he's being punished for not being perceived as a loyal Democrat, not being perceived as somebody who is really plugging for his party. Iraq is a problem, but that's just part of it. In the case of Cynthia McKinney, I just think she's embarrassed her base and the folks outside her base. And I think that this is her second time around doing that. Mm-hmm. It's her second time around doing that. Even her own campaign spokesperson said, look, you know, we lost some of our own folks, and we had Republicans crossing over, and we had white folks who never voted in these races before voting against us. And I think that's what did her in.
All right, let's move on to another topic. Ward Connolly, I know he's one of your favorites, known for his push to ban some
affirmative. Who are you talking to, Tony? Yeah, really.
Not that kind of class ticket.
I'm just going to leave that out there for you guys to consider. Ward Connolly, known for his push to ban some affirmative action programs in Michigan, as you probably know, was coming under fire for receiving an annual $1 million in payments from his two tax-exempt nonprofit organizations. Apparently, John Conyers from Michigan, Charlie Rangel, want the IRS to look into whether Connolly's pay violates the federal tax code against excessive compensation from nonprofit organizations. So here's my question to you all. This is a shot across the bow, so to speak. But other than potentially hurting Connolly, if it even does that, what impact do you think this can really have on the larger issue?
Well, my thought is when I heard about and read about the $1 million salary or compensation compared to my salary, I remember that song, I'm Just Your Average Ordinary Everyday Superhero, trying to save the world, but never really sure. Look, with a $1 million compensation salary package, I could indeed change the world. But, you know, this issue of the IRS, it's not just an IRS issue in terms of overcompensation, but it's also a state issue. Not-for-profits are regulated by the state. In New York, it's regulated by the Attorney General. And my question is, why is the chairman of the board, which should be a lay position, receiving a salary? Board members, except for the CEO, are not supposed to draw compensation for their service, and that's what it is, service on a not-for-profit board. I think that $1 million is really excessive. What do you call it, a salary? What do you call it, expenses? What do you talk about being a consultant? There is something fishy here. I mean, this is not a large not-for-profit. This is not the Red Cross.
There's been something fishy about Ward Connolly for as long as he has been drawing breath. In fairness to him, I would say that if the expense money, which is about $700,000, is airfare and yada 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 hotel, that's fine. But
I don't think it's fine.
Well, if it's actually airfare, you know, and all that kind of. But the fact is that the IRS has been sicked on the NAACP. Those of us who work in progressive nonprofits know how difficult it is for us to fall under the guidelines. You can only use a certain percentage for any lobbying activity. You're not supposed to lobby. And this
That's
is pure
right.
lobbying. And so it seems to me that this organization should not be a 501c3, should be disqualified. The IRS should be deployed. And if they don't do this, this does speak to the unlevel playing field. The fact that the IRS, again, was sicked on the NAACP suggests that Ward Connolly should be shut down, if not simply imprisoned.
But he has two not-for-profits. One's the lobbying side, and the other is a not-for-profit.
And altogether,
the
he manages.
Side.
Well, you know, the average working family has an income. The average family has an income of about $52,000 a year with two earners. The average African American family an income of $30,000. So for brother affirmative action man or anti-affirmative action man to pick up $276,922 in salary does speak to something. Now y'all tell me what.
But the question, Lori, I want you to address this because our two esteemed colleagues, although their points were well taken, neither of them really did hit the point that I'm trying to get to, and whether or not this really makes a difference in the big fight against affirmative action in Michigan.
Well, first of all, let me just remind Michael, the superheroes don't get paid anything at all. When did you ever see Superman get paid on?
Superman is a fictional character.
All right, let's get back to it. What do you say, Laura? Is it going to make a difference or not?
I'm more skeptical. I am in terms of what differences will make. It won't make any difference. Is Julianne?
Oh, is she there? We lost her?
We lost her.
Okay.
But I will pick up her point and say it won't make a difference. People will vote on the Michigan Civil Rights Initiative based on their views about the initiative. And I think the initiative will go down.
All right. I think we have her back. Are you back, Laura?
No.
Oh, we will. Not yet. All right. Do you agree with that, Julianne, that it's not really going to make a difference? Or do you think it might, even if it's accurate, what is being said, even if the IRS were to go in and slap him on the hand or even shut him down, do you think it will have an impact on the larger issue? I've lost
She's
her, too.
To.
Hey, I guess it's just the brothers left for this
is what I've been hoping for. Okay, let's go one-on-one with Tony and Michael.
Well, it seems like we've exhausted that topic. Well, hopefully we will get both of them back before we run out of time. We've only got a few moments left. Let's move on to something else, though. Here in L.A., Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa got himself into some hot water with the Muslim community because he had come out in support of Israel and had not shown to the Muslim community's point of view any sympathy towards their concerns. So there was a meeting last weekend where Villaraigosa met with 10 Muslim leaders and explained that there was a mix-up in his schedule and yada, yada, yada. So they seem to have accepted his apology. My question to you is, you know, what is a big city mayor to do in a situation like this?
Well, a big city mayor and any mayor can't be two-faced. So the question for me is, what is he apologizing for? He says he's apologizing for a mix-up in his schedule.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he says.
Right.
That he got these invitations for interfaith vigils or ceremonies.
Yep.
And he said, well, that's my apology. He didn't say, I apologize for standing up for Israel. He didn't say, I apologize for taking the side of Israel against Hezbollah. He didn't say that. So you can't, but it gives the appearance because now he's saying, I apologize to the Muslims, in quotes. It gives the appearance of being two-faced. So my issue is, my concern is, look, what do you really believe? Do you believe that the attacks on Israel were something to say and to object to, which he did? Or do you now say I have to be more even-handed on the issue? The question is the issue. It's not the personality. It's not the schedule of the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mayor, he can and he will meet with whom he wants, and the apologies will be empty based on those people's view of the issue.
I have good news for you. I think we have Julianne and we have Laura back. Are you both back?
You just let Michael run his mouth on that. Listen, it's just like
Bernie Mac says, you know, when we break, we break. And you all went on a break. And it's time for you to come back.
Y'all went on a break.
We've moved on to talk about Antonio Villaraigosa here in Los Angeles, for both of you who were gone for a moment, and the fact that he met with some members of the Muslim community over the weekend who were upset with his pro-Israel stance. And not having shown any sympathy in their view to their point of view. So Michael was just saying that a mayor can't be two-faced. How do you think a big city mayor should handle this? And we've got only about a couple of minutes left.
Well, you know, I heard what Michael said about it. The mayor can meet with, I think what I heard him say is the mayor can meet with anyone he wants to meet with, and that's absolutely true. But politically, he's crazy if he takes sides on this issue. Mm-hmm. He should be, I think, should either be neutral or he should say, look, this is a terrible thing. You know, this is a terrible thing for the Middle East, and we need to clean this thing up. If he hasn't been meeting on a regular basis or attending events at mosques, which apparently is the case, shame on him, whether we're in the middle of a debacle in Lebanon or not. This is something that a mayor should do. He has to respond to all constituents, just not to certain ones at certain times.
That leaves you about 30 seconds, Julianne.
You know, Antonio Villaraigosa is a good guy. He gets diversity and he gets it well. I think that this is a basically tragic moment in our nation's history where the United States has taken a wrong position. And he's got himself caught up in that. He cannot take any position at all. When big city mayors take positions on international issues like this, they get into trouble. But the fact is that by showing sympathy towards Israel when Lebanon has taken the bulk of the casualties, he comes off as being absolutely wrong, and it's unfortunate.
I'm glad you guys were able to get back before we had to say goodbye. In New York,
anyway, was not on my part, by the way.
Well, I don't know about that.
You know what? That was that Superman suit you were wearing.
That's right. I'm not going to tell you that he said he was happy that you two were gone. I'm not going to tell you that.
Michael Myers. Of course he was.
In New York, Mike Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist in Chicago and in Washington, D.C. Economist and author Julianne Malveaux, who was President and CEO of Last Word Productions. We'll see you all later.
So long.
Bye-bye.